Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
I'm biracial. I was born in Salem, but my mother moved us back to Los Angeles when I was a baby because, to summarize, she feared for our lives. I'm willing to bet the majority of my listening audience has never been targeted for state-sanctioned violence because of the color of their skin. And that's what racial profiling is, you know. This is a benign term that describes a complete fucking horror. And I would wager that many of you exist without that fear looming over you. That you never think twice before putting on a ball cap or pulling up your hood while driving. You can go shopping, jogging, walking through your own neighborhood without that nagging worry. But both my guest, Jason Kefouri, and I both believe that just because you haven't experienced it doesn't mean that you don't know that it's happening. In fact, he and his clients are banking on it. It's Sunday, March 12th, and this is episode 114 of The Dive. Today I'm chatting with Jason Kefouri of Kefouri & McDougall Law Firm, who is currently representing more than 50 clients who have been detained, harassed, and unjustly accused of theft by big box stores in the Portland area. Nigel Jaquist reported this week that a raft of lawsuits filed by Kefouri accuses a number of large retailers of straight-up discrimination and has reminded the community's pro-cop contingent that in one of the whitest cities in America, in a state founded as a Confederate spinoff, people are racist. Fucking duh. I'll talk to Jason about his raft of lawsuits in just one sec. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Relatable everywoman, timber heiress, and helicopter company gaslighting girl boss Betsy Johnson has accepted a new gig, appearing periodically on KGW TV News as a political commentator. Very necessary POV. Brian Burke's cover feature is a dynamic photo essay covering America's oldest student-run radio station, KBPS. And it's a heartwarming reminder of what these kids are capable of and who they can be when we just give them access. And in the Potlander column, chronic pain sufferers can read about how cannabis can treat pain without pharmaceuticals. And they can consider a few pain-relieving cultivars from a strain list curated by yours truly. Now let's catch up with Jason Kefouri to learn how his law firm is setting the standard for social justice lawyering.
What we have seen at our law firm is an explosion of people being targeted, profiled, shopping while black. Our law firm has probably 20 cases in litigation right now, and another 30 cases that we haven't even filed yet. We're going to be filing those in the coming weeks. We thought that these four lawsuits that we filed this week really showcased the problem of what it's like to be a black person in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
All of these folks are professionals. They were doing absolutely nothing wrong, and they had security target them, believe they were thieves, and confront them in very aggressive, rude, and sometimes physical fashion. And, you know, frankly, we put all of these out at the same moment because we wanted to show, sadly, this can happen to anybody in our community. And what I have found is that Portland jurors are starting to wake up to the reality. Mm-hmm. That there's racism in our local community. You know, we did a lot of we've done a lot of these lawsuits. I would say we're sort of the king of the racial discrimination shopping while black type cases in Oregon. And when we would go to court on these, historically, the jurors would agree, yeah, it was a false arrest. They didn't have probable cause to stop and search and detain these folks. However, we're not going to say that it was because of their race. The jurors didn't want to go there. And I think it's because people in Portland wanted to believe that we live in this progressive bubble where racism doesn't happen to people. And what we've seen in our last two trial verdicts is people are getting the message that, yes, these are because of people's skin color. And that's reflected in our big verdict against Walmart, where the jury awarded every dime we asked for, $4.4 million, including $4 million in punitive punishment damages against Walmart. And our recent case, Rose Wakefield, against Jackson's Food Store, where the jurors, again, gave us every dollar we asked for, $1 million for a woman who the gas station told her he wouldn't serve her gas after ignoring her for minutes and serving white customers. And he said, you know, I don't serve black people, and laughed at her and walked away from her. So, you know, this kind of thing just doesn't happen to an average white person in Portland, Oregon. Mm. And I think that we as a community and our jury pools are starting to take this stuff really seriously.
What do these juries look like? What does the average Portland jury look like? Is it diverse at all?
Really good question. I would say we've had six trials in the last 6 months, or five trials in the last 6 months. So I've gotten a pretty good beat on who's showing up for jury duty. They tend to be more well-educated, civically minded people, predominantly white. I would say we have only had one or two people of color. And by people of color, I'm thinking of, you know, predominantly African Americans or Latino Americans. Mm-hmm. We've had some Asian folks, but not many. It's probably 90% white, frankly, our last five trials in terms of the jury pool. I think a lot of people are struggling in our community to get by. Mm-hmm. And the average guy who, you know, works at a Walgreens or, you know, works at a Safeway or works at a Walmart type guy or woman are just maybe not showing up for jury duty as much. That's been my experience in the Portland jury pool over the last 6 months post-pandemic.
So did the shift happen during the 2020 kind of the events of 2020? Is that when you noticed the shift in the jury's responses to these types of cases?
Yeah. That's when I noticed that, you know, when you really see it, is when you start doing jury selection, because that's where the jurors, that's the only real chance they get to communicate with you. And, you know, when you ask the question, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to allege that this all happened because of my client's skin color. Is there anybody here who just says, Mr. Kafouri, I don't need to hear any of your evidence. I don't believe that I could ever find that it was because of race. And the last couple times we've done that since the pandemic, nobody. Everybody is stone faced silent when we ask him if there's anybody who just doesn't think it could be because of race. Yeah. So, you know, it's really nice if you do have one or two African-American folks that are in the potential jury pool, because, you know, they bring up 40, 50 people. They get to just talk in front of all 40 or 50 people, usually about their experiences. Yeah. And that kind of sets the tone for the rest of the trial. You know, I had I worked on the Portland police reform ballot measure to have the Independent Citizens Review Board revamped. That was on the ballot there in 2020. And from that experience, I interviewed two high-profile, younger African-American men, both of them independently of each other. I asked them, how often have you been pulled over by a Portland police officer or a police officer in your life for doing nothing? And both of them independently told me over 40 times each.
Yeah.
Now, that is just not something that we as white people ever have to deal with. Mm-hmm. We don't think about it. That is the sad reality, especially for being a black male, I think, in our community.
Yeah. When my mother would come to visit me,
like clockwork, as soon as she crossed the border between California and Oregon, she started getting pulled over. And I think the record for the most times she got pulled over between California and Portland was like 10 times.
It's flabbergasting. And what I'm happy about is that we aren't solving the problem of racist people out there. I think it's actually racist people feel more empowered
now
that Donald Trump has been there, and the right wing people have gotten so, you know, sort of fascistic about, you know, their white pride.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm white and proud of it, and I'm going to, you know, show my white prideness. But what I will say is that I think for most people, they're now accepting that there are bigots and racists in our world, and they're sending messages to corporations that you don't hire those people, and if you find out they have any tendencies like that, you better fire them on the spot or you're going to be in trouble.
Absolutely. So what were the corporate responses, or what have the responses been to these cases?
So I actually got a phone call from Home Depot right when we filed the lawsuit and the story came out, asking about settlement. It's interesting. I can't disclose settlement numbers. I mean, obviously the verdicts we can talk about because those are public record. But
sure.
In a nutshell, a lot of these cases were settling for, you know, mid five figures. And I've seen a double, even triple in the last couple of years on the settlement value of these. And I think these big verdicts speak to that. I don't know if you saw this week or last week, there was it got a bunch of national attention for a California mom and her two daughters stopped at a Starbucks, and the police detained them for an hour for doing nothing but going to the Starbucks. And the jury just awarded them something like $8.2 million in an Alameda federal court last week. So, you know, I think I have never seen a better climate to take a race-based case to a jury than we have right now in our society. And I think there's also, sadly, been a lot more of these cases because there has been, you know, some sort of a crackdown happening in these big box stores on theft. And as a result, I think they're empowering their security people to selectively detain and stop people and prove they're purchasing. And that is just illegal. You have to have probable cause. You have to see that person take something, conceal it, walk past the registers in order to stop them. You can't just ask, unless you're a Costco, where every single person has to show a receipt, and that's just the policy, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If you're going to have a policy where the security gets to decide who they're going to stop and detain, then that's an illegal policy.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have discriminatory outcomes like we're seeing in all of these cases when you do that.
Yeah. It's not like the most gentle people go into that line of work in the first place, you know, work. No shade, but
yeah, well, and a lot of them are guys that probably frankly wish they were police officers.
Wish they were cops, exactly.
They like the power. They don't have to go through police academy. They get to carry a firearm oftentimes, these security guys have. They have, you know, mace and belt, and they have a big, you know, badge of authority that says security. And you know, we've had cases where they get unbelievably physical, you know, grab, detain, handcuff, take to the back room, you know, the whole nine yards.
Yeah. I know you said you're not trying to solve racism, but do you think that these cases, I mean, you said you've got 20 in litigation, 30 still yet to be filed.
30, yeah, still to be filed, yeah.
Do you think that these cases, these verdicts will kind of ripple in the same way that the Fred Meyer verdict did, your father's Fred Meyer verdict?
We had an employee at Fred Meyer's. Just to tell your viewers the story, we had a lawsuit back in the 90s where a jury awarded, I think it was $475,000 against Fred Meyer's, including a very large amount of that in punitive damages, which that was a lot of money back then
'90s
for a verdict. And it was because we found out they had a policy of this, you know, just checking receipts without probable cause to do it. And we took that to the jurors and we said, you got to send a message to Fred Meyers and other stores. And Fred Meyers actually changed their policy. They stopped having their people check random receipts as a result. And we don't get a lot of store false arrests, you know, detention, grabbing stuff at Fred Meyers. And we haven't had those in my 13 years. And frankly, since the Bloom case. And if you go to the Fred Meyer handbook, they actually reference some of our cases in there is what I was told.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I really hope, I do think, frankly, big corporations are bottom line driven creatures, and if they realize that they're facing and they're having to pay out tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars over and over and over again on these things, I think that's the way corporations change. And so I really do hope. I would love to come back in a few years and say, wow, a lot of these stores really cleaned up their act.
Yeah.
Frankly, I feel like the problem has gotten a lot worse, though, in the last year or two. And, you know, there's probably a combination of different reasons for that. But that's why, you know, we do this, you know, both to get compensation and justice for our clients, but also because we're social justice warriors on this topic. And we want to change corporate behavior. We don't want people to feel discriminated and targeted by the color of their skin, you know, especially in this community where we think of ourselves as a, you know, progressive, you know, community. We're not Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell that to the Portland Public Schools because they need to hear that as well.
Yeah. Well, we get a lot of calls from people talking about their kids being bullied and racially profiled. I had an ugly call this week for a family in the Vancouver, Washington area where they said the N-word and all these horrible things to one of the other kids to another kid. So, you know, it's sadly, I think that racist behavior has been amplified in our society, and racist people feel empowered to show their racism. Yeah, it's true.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really happy that there's social justice warriors like you out there putting them in their place and making them accountable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody's got to do
it. It's necessary. Totally.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Jason Kefouri of Kefouri & McDougall. And thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, bye.